Welcome to another episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? The podcast that says it's okay to believe in free speech and democracy, and it's also okay to disagree with leftist populist ideologies. Today, I'm going to be talking about justice, how the so-called progressives, the people who ostensibly should be supporting a fair justice system, appear to be undermining the justice process. We can look at how some ideologies of Black Lives Matter, Me Too, and cancel culture challenge equality in the justice system. So the basic principles of justice are simple. Everyone should have the right to a fair trial, a reasonable defense, and presumption of innocence. There is a problem when populist ideologies disregard these in the pursuit of propaganda. Remember that the justice system is there to protect society, so compromising it is bad for everyone. So the first challenge to the justice system comes from the Me Too movement, the proposal that women who allege sexual harassment should be trusted without the need for evidence or a fair process. The accused men should be denied access to a fair trial, reasonable defense, and the presumption of innocence. Women are not being singled out by being called upon to present evidence and be cross-examined. Even a parent who has observed their child being murdered in front of them, which I would allege is at least as traumatic as sexual assault, is still required to give evidence to the police and may be called upon to testify under cross-examination in court. The justice system provides a robust process to fulfill its requirements of fairness. It has nothing to do with targeting women who have been traumatized by alleged sexual assault, and it has nothing to do with targeting women or not caring about them. It may be awful and traumatic, but if women do not report sexual crimes to the police in a timely fashion, or for example, rather go to the media first, then they don't allow for gathering of physical evidence, such as injuries, a semen sample, and eyewitnesses. Then the trial becomes about one person's word against another, which may disadvantage the victim by being insufficient to convict. The process is designed to enable successful conviction of perpetrators and protect those wrongly accused. Presumption of innocence places the burden of proof on the prosecution. It doesn't matter whether you're dealing with sexual assault or any other crime. Once the issue gets played out in the press, it is usually prejudicial against the alleged perpetrator. It becomes questionable whether there can be a fair jury trial because public opinion has already been influenced by the press spin, which is generally unsympathetic to the presumption of innocence because innocence doesn't sell newspapers. The alleged rapist has the right like every other citizen, but their reputation has already been ruined for life before anything has been proved, and the justice system has been undermined. There is contradictory thinking here because the same individuals and organizations that allege that you should take a woman's word, but not a man's, also assert that there are no differences between men and women, that gender is a social construct, and that men are toxic by nature. If that's so, then women are also toxic, because we're all the same, so we can't trust them either. You can't assert that women are trustworthy and that men and women are the same, and then claim that men are not trustworthy. If men and women were rarely identical, then there'd be an equal number of men being raped by women, which we don't see anywhere in the world, regardless of social culture. Of course, in reality, there are toxic men and toxic women who cannot be trusted. And that's why we have the ideal of the justice system that requires a fair trial, no matter how traumatized victims feel. And of course, within that construct, we would want to be as sensitive as possible to taking care of women who have been sexually assaulted or alleged sexual assault. And that's a whole different issue. How do we manage this sensitively so that women can take perpetrators to court? Now, the same civil libertarians who strongly support the idea that men are toxic and cannot be trusted, and that women must be protected against the constant threat of rape culture, also assert that any man who identifies himself as a woman should be completely trusted and allowed to enter vulnerable female spaces. The same civil libertarians who strongly support the idea that men are toxic and cannot be trusted, and that women must be protected against the constant threat of rape culture, also assert that any man who declares that he identifies himself as a woman should be completely trusted and allowed to enter vulnerable female safe spaces without their consent and no objective means to test the veracity of their identity claims. So obviously we have a consistency problem here because We have movements that have fought tooth and nail to protect women from the dangers of toxic, predatory men, but now they are declaring that men are completely trustworthy as long as they declare themselves to be women. But I thought men and women were exactly the same anyway. And with this philosophy, how do we protect women from predatory men who are not trustworthy and declare themselves to be women with the intention of gaining access to vulnerable females? We also have problems with women coming forward decades after an alleged sexual assault with no evidence to support the claim and then receiving an enormously sympathetic media and legal response. In quite a few of these cases, the intention is to discredit a politician or to litigate. So we have an accuser with a clear agenda and secondary gain, but no evidence, seeking the destruction of a prominent person's reputation for financial or political gain. This can also be manipulated by other parties to discredit rival politicians. If there's no evidence to support these claims, they should not be made publicly or prosecuted inappropriately, because that allows the potential for innocent men to be targeted for political or malicious reasons without the necessary protection that should be afforded by the law. This has nothing to do with targeting or not caring about women, and everything to do with a fair justice system. Women are humans, and therefore some of them are insalubrious. I'm going to move on to a completely separate category, which is cancel culture. So natural justice and fair process become unimportant in the eyes of the woke movement. If someone has the wrong belief, we can crush them without mercy. We can destroy their reputation, take away their livelihood so that they can't support their family, disgrace them. They don't deserve access to a free trial, reasonable defense, and presumption of innocence like everyone else. And this is not because they are Nazis or bad people, but because they hold inconvenient opinions. So everyone is too scared to say what they think because they fear the retribution of the woke mob. Yeah, the same guys who are into promoting tolerance. Now, one of the difficulties with canceling people for tweets and social media messages from years ago is that there are changing social norms. What a person tweeted irresponsibly a decade ago may have been culturally acceptable at the time. The problem is that the current cancel culture does not have any compassion for a person who shows remorse, someone who has changed and rehabilitated, and someone who apologizes and says, "Hey, that was a terrible thing to say, but back then people were saying those things. I'm sorry, I would never do that again." So it seems that being tolerant doesn't require that we are also forgiving. The same civil libertarians who vigorously demand that rehabilitation be a major focus of punitive justice, even when we're dealing with repeat murderous, violent criminals, also promote severe punishment for men who are alleged to have sent the wrong tweet or made a sexual advance on a woman as a teenager. Think Judge Kavanaugh. And now they disregard the fact that the person in question is happily married and a committed, law-abiding, dedicated servant of society. So they have rehabilitated. Here I would like to draw an important distinction between an irresponsible act and a serious crime such as rape, because the latter must be prosecuted regardless of claims of rehabilitation. Unfortunately, this process has been supported by social media, and this has enabled the regression of justice because it encourages trial by media, and there is no access to natural justice or fairness. The punishments are significantly disproportionate, and there is no allowance for people to apologize and change. I would argue that tolerance and forgiveness go hand in hand. To reinforce this point as an interesting irony, I often encounter doctors who don't turn up to work on time, practice questionable quality medicine. To remediate these problems within the system takes months of exhaustive process and paperwork with an uncertain outcome. But if this doctor were to state the wrong opinion about climate change or gender diversity, well, that's much worse than irresponsibly killing a patient. As I've said before, the woke battle is about control of belief, not morality. Now, the next challenge to the justice system is the presumption of racism. Once we undermine law enforcement, we empower criminals. If we destroy public faith in the justice system, then this is bad for everyone. It's bad for society. So let's at least do this based on evidence, not propaganda. If we are to allege systemic racism in law enforcement as per Black Lives Matter, then that requires a proper examination of statistics. How many white people are killed by cops in the US versus how many black people? Incidentally, more white people have been killed by the police in recent years than black people. yet policemen in the US are much more likely to be killed by a black person than a white person. Then you would also need to look at the kinds of interactions, because there's obviously greater risk if a person resists arrest or if they have weapons or firearms. Having looked at that data, if there is a clear pattern that black people are more likely to be treated violently in the same kinds of interactions, then there are grounds to investigate systemic racism. But there is a problem when a black person killed by a white cop is presumed to be a racist event. Was it self-defense? Before we unjustly lynch someone who's putting their life on the line to protect the public, was the death due to an inappropriate or excessive act? Now, if we determine that the killing was excessive or unnecessary, then we must investigate the details. There's a justice process: fair trial, reasonable defense, and the right to the presumption of innocence. Was it an individual error by the policeman, a bad judgment, a brutal act? Did the policeman follow the correct protocols? Maybe the protocols are too extreme or require revision. So if a cop kills someone but they're following exactly what they were trained to do, that may not be racism or brutality. Did the involved cop have a history of overreaction and violence? Did these behaviors occur more when dealing with people of color? Because there are many reasons why someone may act brutally, ranging from a brutal personality, mental health issues, post-traumatic stress disorder, the extreme stress of arresting people during COVID and risking infection, perhaps a personal grudge against a serial criminal based on past interactions. Hence, racism is only one of many possible causes, even in the case of a white cop killing a black person unjustly. Once the presumption is racism, the accused cannot hope for a fair trial in the current volatile circumstances, and the entire justice system and law enforcement have been undermined based on an unproven assumption that is really about political ideology and propaganda rather than evidence. And there is a promotion of racial disharmony, which may or may not be justified, but should not occur based on presumptive propaganda. So I do want to make an important point that if there is systemic racism, it should be eradicated. And if a policeman does unjustly kill someone or inappropriately, that must be investigated and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But what I'm saying here is that the presumption that everything is racist is actually bad for society and bad for the justice system. So in summary, a fair justice system depends on maintaining a robust process based on the right to a fair trial, a reasonable defense, and presumption of innocence. It is the protection, not compromise, of this process that promotes fairness and equality for people of all races and genders. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow me and share it with your friends. And join me for the next episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? Please note that the views and opinions on this show are my own and do not reflect those of my colleagues or employers.